We are in Perek Tet, and yes, the sheet is all Hebrew. I did not have time to start writing up translations, but don't worry, we're going to go through it, we'll get it. The chapter 9, again, is our introduction to Shaul. So briefly, to review, we talked about having a king from outside of Yehuda and the two different schools of thought. One school of thought saying that monarchy was always meant for the tribe of Yehuda, and Shaul is just a fill-in temporarily, and perhaps chosen because the Jews don't deserve to have their melech yet, their real king yet. This is a nation that had asked in the wrong way, with the wrong motivations. Abarbanel disagreed and said that no, monarchy is actually open. When Yaakov said Yehuda is going to lead, it meant the tribe of Yehuda is going to lead. It didn't mean Yehuda is actually going to have the king. And it's only once David comes along and so impresses God, that God says, okay, the Davidic line is going to be the line of monarchy, and it's not about Yehuda, it's about David per se. But until then, Shaul could have actually been and Melech and remained Melech. Fine. We were introduced to Shaul with this great yichus, this great lineage, which we talked about, and how the message of emphasizing his lineage makes sense when you're choosing royalty. Royalty is mikerev achecha, from among your brethren, people who are rooted in the nation, and we demonstrate that via this lineage. It also shows positive influences, which are meant to show good character. But at the same time, we're not entirely sold on Yichus. We're not entirely sold on lineage. Abarbanel pointed out, Binyamin is not exactly a tribe of great lineage. Our memory of Binyamin is Pilegesh Begiva, that whole civil war. And then we were introduced to Shaul's positive traits. And each of the traits could be read as material, physical, apparently superficial, or traits of substance and meaning regarding his character. And my suggestion was that that's intentional, because the people think they're choosing a king based on one set of criteria, and Hashem is really choosing the king based on another set of criteria. And they think they're getting what they want, but Hashem knows they're actually getting what he wants, because that's always the way the game is played. The house always wins. So you may think you're getting somebody who is young and tall and attractive and so on, and Shaul has those traits. But what you're really getting is a person of chayil, of substance. What you're really getting is someone who is bachur, he is choice in terms of his character. Someone who is tov, meaning he is good to God and good to other people. He is gavoa mikol ha'am, meaning not that he is tall, but as Malbim reads it, he is somebody who in character is way above everybody else. That's the idea, is that both are getting what they believe is valuable in a king. And then the last point was, so why exactly does God pick Shaul? Meaning, besides this game of satisfying what the nation wants, satisfying what Hashem wants, what trait is it that stands out as deserving of becoming a melech? And we said, if you look at the Midrashim regarding Moshe and David, you find the emphasis on their sensitivity. It plays out in the idea that they look after the sheep and they're careful for the welfare of each sheep, playing on Psukim from Tehillim Ayin Zayin, Tehillim Ayin Chet, chapter 77 and 78 from Tehillim, as well as the Psukim when they are picked to become king. We find them identified as shepherds, and not just as shepherds, but as shepherds who take care of the sheep in a way that suits the sheep themselves, something we saw with Yehoshua back when he was selected. And also the fact that they are careful about the lands of others, so that they take their sheep out to the midbar, to the wilderness, so they won't graze on the lands of other people. And we look for that in Shaul as well. And that's something we started to talk about a little bit at the end, Shaul's sensitivity. And that's really where we're going to go today, because we're going to see Shaul, along with a servant, looking for the donkeys that have been lost, and we'll see the way he does it. The way he goes about the search tells us a lot about the personality of a man and why he was selected to become king. Okay? That was just a quick bring everybody up to date, since it's been a couple of weeks through Pesach, and now we're good to go. So take a look, please, at Perek Tet, chapter 9, sentence 3. We're going to read sentences 3 to 5. Okay? If anyone has a phone that is not silent, that's your reminder. Thank you. Vatovadna ha'asonos lekish avi Shaul. the donkeys of Kish, father of Shaul, were lost. Vayomer Kish el Shaul b'nav. So Kish says to his son Shaul, Kach na itcha as achad meha ne'arim. Take one of the ne'arim. The word na'ar is often a youth, but it is certainly here meant as a servant. V'kum lech bakesh es ha'azonos. And get up and go looking for these donkeys. Vayavur b'har Ephraim. So he goes through Har Ephraim. Har Ephraim being this mountainous region where so much happens, especially in Shoftim and Shmuel. Vayavur be'eretz Shalisha. He goes through the land of Shalisha. V'lo matzahu. Nope, not there. Vayavur be'eretz Sha'alim. They go through the land of Sha'alim. Va'ayin. No dice. Vayavur be'eretz Yemini. They go through the land of Binyamin. V'lo matzahu. Nope, not there. Hema bau be'eretz Tzuf. And they came to the land of Tzuf. I remember the place Tzuf. Where was Tzuf? We know it from the beginning of the book. Vayi ish echad me haramatayim Tzufim. Elkanah, right? Was introduced as Elkanah ben Tohu ben Tzuf, right? We remember that. The land of Tzuf is Shmuel's land. When Shmuel lives in Ramah, right, he's in the land of Tzuf. So, V'sha'ul amar l'na'aro asher imo l'cha v'nashuva. Shaul says to the youth, let's go home. Pen yechdal avi min ha'asonos v'dag lanu. Lest my father stop worrying about the donkeys and start worrying about us. Right? We've gone from place to place to place, haven't found him. You know, dad's going to worry already. So we better go back. Okay. Let's pause there. What is interesting or questionable about the three sentences we just read? Sorry, one second. Or it says, why bother telling us?
All three stops.
Right. It's not three stops, it's five stops. Right? It wasn't clear to me whether any of them were introductory to, like when it says Har Ephraim in the beginning, I wasn't sure if that was introduction or if that's one of the places. That wasn't clear to me. But you enumerate all the places. Ethi, you were going to say?
I was going to say, it shows that he's thinking and concerned about his father.
Right. It shows concern for his father. Good. We're going to come back to that. But what's weird here? The enumeration of each place is certainly strange. Yeah.
I'm thinking that in each one it specifies that they looked and they didn't find him. They looked and they didn't find him. Yeah, he arrives and stuff. It says, okay, let's go home. We assume that they looked and didn't find him.
I would assume so also. Like they arrived at Suf, and I would assume that it means they didn't find him, because what's your alternative? That they didn't look, then why did they go there?
Then why would they say specifically that they looked and they...
Well, I understand, but I think it's because there was nothing else to report on those other places. Like, they looked, didn't find, move on. Looked, didn't find, move on. Get to Tzuf, said, you know, we got a problem here, and then other things are going to happen, as you'll see.
Do you know where Shalim and Shalisha are in relation to where he is? Are they in the tribal areas?
Right. So that Mikra on Charlie Shah tries to note that we do find this place elsewhere within Tanakh.
Is it in Binyamin's territory?
He does not give us a sense of exactly where it is. When he gets to Eretz Sha'alim, he says that could be the land we're going to see in a few more chapters called Eretz Shu'al, which is near Geva, and then he mentions the possibilities about exactly where it could be.
Geva, like
Geva? No, that's Geva. The different place. He says it's somewhere near Shalisha. It bounds Eretz Shalisha, and often on he gives you a little hints. The bottom line is it's all in this region that's north of Yerushalayim,
in Benjamin's territory.
In presumably yes, but what else? Let's look at it a little differently. Shaul was just introduced to us with this tremendous lineage. Right? You had this grand presentation of five generations. His father is a Gibor Chayil, right? He himself, head and shoulders above everybody else, Bachur, Tov, and all of that. And now he's out looking for the donkeys. I mean, look, everybody's got to do certain grunt work. That's just the way it is. Doesn't matter who you are.
Why does it repeat what?
No, it says
It tells us who his father is, and then it says to his son Shaul.
I was wondering about the repetition there also, except that I was wondering if that was just because I'm biased by the fact that I already know the relationships.
No, but even so, he said
he had a son named Shaul.
Said Shaul's father Kish, and then Kish said to his son Shaul.
Right.
So, I mean that possibly.
Right. It could reflect that the fact that it's only the relationship that's making this happen. You know, that could be.
Showing the same compassion that Moshe had with the sheep and everyone else.
Right. So absolutely, the simple, straightforward read of this, I think, is that this is meant to illustrate the sensitivity that Shaul has. The if you take a look on your sheet at the first source, Ralbag, in the end of this section, in Perek Yudbet, he gives you his set of lessons that are learned from this section. So lesson 5, Hachamishi, Hulahudia Shleimut Mishar Shaul, is to teach us the completeness of Shaul's traits. Bamesh Amar, when he said, Henyechdal Avimin Ha'atanot V'da'ag Lanu, father's going to stop worrying about the donkeys, he's going to worry about us instead. Kichein Haya Ha'inyan, because in fact, that is what happened. As we'll see later on in the chapter, Kfima Shasupar Bezeh Sipur, as will be told in the story, V'ine Yesh Lezeh HaKoach Mavo B'inyan HaNevuah, which makes Shaul suitable for prophecy. There's already entree into prophecy here. Number one, he has the traits of worrying about his father. Number two, he's right. What he anticipates is actually correct.
Why does Shaul need as prophecy? He's a melech.
He's going to become a prophet as well. We're not there yet, but he's going to be a prophet. He's got that too. Which is important if you want a king who's going to bring his direction from Hashem and not from himself.
So
right? We talked about it.
Why need an Navi as an advisor? The king's going to do it all. You got rid of that.
Well, we'll see how it plays out with Shaul. When is he a Navi and when is he not a Navi? We'll see. Nevuah is not a fixed state. But there's more here. It's not just the sensitivity of our father's going to worry, but it's supported by him checking in five different or four different, depending on how you count them, places. That's an interesting thing. But not only that. Here, let's go back to the psukim. Watch what's going to happen. Pasuk Vav, sentence 6. Vayomer lo. He, Shaul, says to, I'm sorry, the Nar, the youth, says to Shaul, Hine na ish Elokim ba'ir hazos.
How do we know that it's a Nar? I mean, the English told me that, but how is it
either? You'll see the sentence. It's Shaul's going to reply.
Oh.
The Nar says to Shaul, Hine na ish Elokim ba'ir hazos. You know, there's a man of God in this town. V'ha'ish nechbad. And he is a person of status. He is honored. Kol asher yedaber bo yavo. Whatever he says, happens. Ata, so now. Nil chasham. Let's go there. Ulaya gidlanu es darkeinu asher halachnu aleha. Maybe he will tell us the path we have walked. Vayomer Shaul. And Shaul says, Linaro, to his servant. Vihinene lech. Let's say we go. Umana vila ish. What are we going to bring him? Ki alechem azal mikelenu, bread's all gone. Useshura ein lahavili isha elokim. We have no gift to bring to the man of God. Maitanu, what do we have? Vayosef hanar lanose Shaul. So the kid responds to Shaul. The kid, servant, responds to Shaul. Vayomer, and he says, Hine nimtza v'yadi reva shekel kasef. I have it. I have a quarter shekel. Vinas quarter shekel, right? The half shekel is everybody's annual contribution to the Mishkan. I got quarter shekel. I rooted around in the lint in my pocket, and lo and behold, Vinasatili Isha Elokim v'higid lanu es darkeinu. I'm going to give it to the man of God, and he'll tell us our path. Hang on. That is the unit. I mean, there's more obviously coming, but let's pause at this point. What is weird here?
Why are they asking him again?
First of all, why are you bringing a gift? Especially, to whom are you bringing this gift? Not just that. To whom are you bringing this gift? Who is the man of God? Shmuel, who we've already said takes nothing from anybody. In Perek Yud Bet, Shmuel is going to say to the people, tell me what I've taken, and they're going to say, you don't take anything.
Did Shaul not know? They don't know that. Did he not know that Shmuel was there?
Like, that's a question. Yes, Ricky.
What struck me is when it say, show us the way, I mean, they know where they came from, and I'm assuming they know the way around. Why are they looking
right,
for
this questions? Is an odd turn of phrase. Tell us, he's going to tell us the path we have walked. Tell us the path we're going to walk. That, I'll call you a prophet. Tell us where we've walked. I'm not so impressed.
My English says different. The path which we should travel.
Which we should travel, precisely because they're bothered by this question. That's why they're saying that, but it's not what the words literally mean.
But they obviously know the area. You know?
I mean, there are a few different ways you can do it. But let me ask you a question. Is a quarter shekel? I mean, that's what you're going to bring a gift to the Navi, right? Here, Navi. Now that we got your attention, Mr. Navi, right? Rabbi Navi, right? Shmuel HaNavi, as in Shofet, leader of all Israel, who we just handed a quarter shekel to. Could you do me a favor? We lost some donkeys. That's what you ask, Shmuel?
But the Nar might not be of the Jewish people, so it might not be this whole business of a seer, of a Navi, might be kind of like a witch thing.
So that's his excuse. We have Shaul's excuse, because Shaul's part of this conversation. Right, Shaul's from the country. Shaul doesn't really know much.
How the city ways work? What if it's just like a bracha that you go to a holy man and so it's good luck for you to go and see him and he'll tell you about yourself, kind of thing? Something that will heal.
So they're not looking for him to tell them about the donkeys?
I don't
think so. Theoretically possible, but they're going to ask him. And it seems, I mean, you're right, you could really sort of separate the two parts of the story and say, they end up in Tzuf, forget the donkeys, but you know, we're here already, let's go see Shmuel and let him tell us about it. It's an interesting approach. The commentators grab all of these things and say, alright, so there's clearly a lot that's going on here, but before we get to what the commentators do with this story, I want to go back a step. Why are they going home? Why did they decide we want to go home before they decided on talking to Shmuel?
Because
father's going to worry.
So why take more time?
Don't they have another reason to go home?
They aren't far enough.
You ran out of food.
We have no food. We have no food. They could buy food. Can they? We have no money. No, Shaul didn't know about that money. The Nar said, wait, I got. Shaul thinks, I have no food. I have no money. The only reason for me to turn around and go home, though, is because dad's going to worry. That is a reflection of his character. He was going to push on and do whatever he could to find the donkeys for his father, regardless of the fact that he's going to have to go begging somewhere in order to get something to eat. He doesn't want to disappoint his father.
How do we know that he's just not confused? Because
the story tells it to us this way.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But isn't going to see the man of God delaying getting home to the worrying father?
Yes, unless you're going to say, he feels like maybe he's going to tell me now and I'll have the answer. So let me just ask him the question. He's going to see him that day. He doesn't realize there's a long line. He has to wait like 5 weeks. No. One other note that's interesting here. Anything strike you as interesting regarding the conversation between Shaul and the servant?
Like equals.
How does the servant also know that Shaul doesn't know? How does he know that? No one. I thought everyone knows about Shmuel.
Yeah, apparently unless he knows that Shmuel's in town and Shaul doesn't. But you're right, it's strange. But not only that, as Ricky just said, he treats the servant as an equal.
But this, we don't know if it's a young person or could be an older person.
It
doesn't
matter.
What servant would offer
you? They wouldn't say now if it was an old person.
Now it could be anything.
Not only that, but did you notice the wording that he used? We talked about the worrying?
Mm-hmm. About us.
About us. He's going to worry about us. I mean, frankly, he's going to worry about his son. that's who he's going to worry about.
How old is Shaul here? Let's say he's 14 years old. So this is not an unusual thing for a 14-year-old to be sent out with an attendant. I'm going to send you out. This is your first big job of the week, darling. You're going to learn how to go search for the donkeys and take your stag with you in case you should get lost, which is what happened. You got delayed or lost or mucked up.
And we don't know how old he is. That's my problem.
I understand that, but let's say he is older.
That story doesn't work, but he's young.
They say he was the guy from the war, the police guy. Wasn't he the guy?
I mean, the Nar? No, I have no way to... Oh, how old Shaul is?
Yeah.
No, Shaul is already... Sorry, yes. Shaul is older. Yes, Shaul is already older.
How do we know that?
He's going to have a kid later on, you'll see. He's that old that he, yeah. But also, he only, I mean, we'll see more about Shaul.
How old is he?
I don't know the years. I don't have an age. But he's old enough that he's got kids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
So he's 12.
Right. I think there's a lot going on here. I also think that the mundanity of the story that's presented here emphasizes that God is manipulating routine events. Because that's what we're about to see in this whole chapter, is God moves everybody into place in order for Shaul to become the melech. Okay. So, we have to see more about this business of asking Shmuel and giving Shmuel a gift. But I want to finish this segment first and then come back to the to all of this. So, Pasuk Tet, sentence 9. Actually, just to explain one note, on he'll tell us our derech that we mentioned here. So there are two different views in the commentators. One view is that it's what your translation is assuming, which is he's going to tell us the path we should walk, or he's going to tell us about the that which we've been seeking. The path means that which we've been looking for. That's one take. The other take, which we'll see, is he's going to tell us where we've been, and that will demonstrate he's for real, and therefore we will trust the counsel that he gives us. So we're going to test him. We'll see. Can he tell us where we've been? And if he can, then we'll go on his advice. But let's go back here. Pasuk Tes is very strange. You get this narrator comment. Lefanim b'Yisrael, back in the day, Ko amar ha'ish belechto l'drosh Elokim. People who went to seek God would say the following: L'chu v'nelcha ad ha-ro'eh. Let's go to the ro'eh, to the seer. Ki la'navi hayom yikare lefanim ha-ro'eh. Because what we call a navi, they used to call a ro'eh. We use the term navi, they use the term ro'eh. That's just for you to be aware of. Why should you be aware of that? Because of what's coming next. Vayomer Shaul l'naro. So Shaul says to the youth, Tov dvarcha, l'cha nelecha. Matt, what you're saying makes sense. Let's go. Vayelechu el ha'ir asher sham isha elokim. And they went to the city where this isha elokim was. Hema olim b'malei ha'ir. They are ascending into the city. Vehema matzu na'aros yotza'os l'shov mayim. And they saw girls who had come out to get water. And they said, is there in fact the Ro'eh in town, which we now know is the Navi? And they answered, and they gave him a speech. He's here. He's before you. Maher ata, hurry now. Because he came to the city just today. Because there is a big sacrifice today for the nation on the altar. When you get to the city, so you'll find him. But before he goes up to the altar or the higher place, in order to eat, because no one's going to eat until he shows up. He makes a blessing on this sacrifice, and then all the people who have been invited are going to eat. So now go up, because you will find him like today, meaning now, you're going to find him.
Wow.
You could have just said, make a left. Right? Yeah. But that's what happened, and sure enough, Vayalu Ha'ir, they went up into the city. Hema Boim Besol Ha'ir, they were coming into the city. Vine Shmuel Yotze Likrasam, and Shmuel was coming out to greet them. La'alos Habama, to go up to the Bama. Okay. So, what is obviously a problem here? What's the obvious problem?
It looks manufactured. It's manipulated.
Well, the whole thing is manipulated, but what's the problem?
They're going to stop him from going up to the Bama.
What do you mean?
Well, if they're intercepting him before he goes to the...
Who's intercepting? You mean the women?
No, Shaul and his boy.
Oh, they're going to stop Shmuel.
Yeah.
Well, Shmuel actually is going to stop them, but we'll see that. But what's the problem in what we've just read? Right, number one, why did you record that? Do you record every time someone goes somewhere in Chumash and they ask directions, or in Tanakh and they ask directions?
Oh, the speaking part the women get. Take away their...
Oh, I'm sorry, but you could give them better lines. Or you could have said they met women and the women told them where they should, you know, where they should go. Like, this is just bizarre as a set of lines. I mean, you know, we read the story of Devorah and Barak, right? And Devorah said to Barak, go to Kadesh Naphtali, right? And Barak went. We didn't talk about, like, the directions.
But this is like
he went cross country. What?
This is like Moshe when he went all the good stuff
there by the well. It is like Moshe, actually.
I'm thinking that they're touching on all the different things. They're all getting water. Everybody talked to
right. Moshe at the well, and who else?
Rivka, Yaakov.
Right? Rivka with Eliezer, and then Yaakov. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to come back to that. You know what else is strange, though? Yes, we're coming to that, too. But the other piece of this that's strange is this whole explanation about calling someone a Navi, calling someone a Roeh, which, by the way, they say here that, you know, back in the day, people were called a Roeh. So through the magic of the Bar Ilan CD-ROM, I went looking to find out who in Tanakh gets called a Roeh. And the answer is, in the time of King Asa, who is later than this, the Navi Hanani gets called a Roeh once, and other than that, the only person to be called a Roeh is Shmuel. Four times. Or three times. Not clear to me. Three times. No, four times, sorry. Yes. So, well, that's part of the question here is, who's writing this statement of back in the day they used to? The Gemara Bava Basra says, Shmuel is the author of his book. If Shmuel is the author of his book, at least the parts that he's alive for at any rate, but if Shmuel is the author of the book, what is he saying when he says, back in the day, they used to call, well, we call a Navi, they called a Roeh. Shmuel's the one who gets called a Roeh. That's not back in the day, that's now. So, take a look on your sheet, please, because this is such an annoying thing that you have to look into it.
So why didn't they use the Navi in the first place? Why did they have to use the word Roeh?
Yeah, that's what we don't understand. And why the transition? Correct. So Radak gives you a substantive explanation. He says, Kibul Chazal ki Shmuel HaNavi kasav sifro, source number 2. Our sages received by tradition that Shmuel is the author of the book of Shmuel. V'zeh ma'asaya b'sof yamav. And this story was at the end of his life. Ki b'chaye Shaul me Shmuel, because we know he predeceases Shaul. Right? Shaul's only going to be king for a couple of years, and Shmuel is going to be gone a few months before the end of his reign. V'Shaul ha'malach kim shtei shanim, and Shaul only reigned for 2 years. But if so, let's do the math. In Cain, if so, that means that we are now less than 2 years from the end of the book. Right? And you're telling me, back in the day, people said, Roeh, ma'u lifanim o ma'u hayam. What is back in the day, and what is the day? What is today? Yitachei lefarish, as you could explain, ki kriyas ha'roeh le'navi, calling him Roeh, k'mo shaya lefanim, as was done back then, Kain hayahayom shekasav Shmuel zeh. That's what was done now when Shmuel wrote this. Meaning, what he's saying is, it's Shmuel speaking, and what he's saying is, historically, before my day, they used to say haroeh. Umasha amar lefanim, when he says, back then, ein ritzon lomar shenifsak hayom, he doesn't mean back then they did it and they don't anymore. El rotzel lomar ki milifanim, he says, zos hakriya shekar'u lenavi, shekar'o lenavi, sho'u v'naro roeh. What he's saying is, today, Shaul is still using this term, Roeh, which was historically what people used.
But the first time we've come across it.
That we've come across it, but we haven't known anywhere where it would have appeared. Meaning,
the prophet beforehand.
In Shoftim, the people who we encountered, and as well as the beginning of Shmuel, were either called Malach or Ish Elokim. But keep in mind, you didn't go to them. They went to you. The Avo Mikarov Bimei Shmuel Shenifritzah Nevuah, but more recently in Shmuel's day when Nevuah spread, and he's going to have to distinguish between Nevuah and what the Ro'eh was doing. But something new came about called Nevuah. V'yatzu divrei Nevi'im b'Yisrael, and the words of the prophets spread in Israel, hein b'tochachot, hein ba'atidot, whether in terms of rebuke, guidance, or in terms of telling the future. That's Nevuah. Hayu korim gamkin l'ro'eh navi. Then they started calling him a navi. Lafisha lashon navi hu lashon dibur. Menyan niv sfatayim. Because the word navi means speech. Like the phrase niv sfatayim. He's a speaker. V'avapish enam sharash echad. Granted that niv navi doesn't really match. Some people use the old word ro'eh, some people use the word navi. In other words, what Radak is suggesting is that this was a cusp period when people were stopping using the word ro'eh, starting using the word navi, and Shmuel knows that, and therefore he hastens to tell you it's all the same, don't worry about it. But there is a substantive difference and a reason for the transition. And the reason for the transition is because the job description is changing. A ro'eh isn't a navi. A navi, he has told you. A navi is the person who gives you a message that says, God says you're doing something wrong, or God says the following thing is going to happen in the future. So what does a ro'eh do? Keep reading in Radak. Uperush ro'eh, the meaning of ro'eh, sheroeh b'mar'eh nevuah atidot, omashe mitzvah lefi sha'ah lehagid. The job of the ro'eh is that he has some kind of prophetic vision. It is prophetic. He's legit. He has some kind of prophetic vision of what's going to be. Or that which, right now, he's supposed to tell. V'chein zos lefanim b'Yisrael shalaf ish na'alo. And that's just going on in the zos lefanim b'Yisrael. What was once done. But he's trying to demonstrate from the case in Megillas Rus to show you that it's describing what was done and was still done at this moment in time. But the upshot of it is that there's greater guidance coming from a Navi than there is from a Ro'eh. And what he's suggesting is consistent with the fact that they're asking him where the donkeys are. Meaning, if you were talking to a Navi whose job is spiritual guidance, you don't ask him where your donkeys are.
And by the way.
Yeah. Whereas if you're talking to a Ro'eh, that makes more sense. The Ro'eh is the person who sees things. You go to a seer, you say, I've lost our donkeys, it matter to me. Tell me where the donkeys are. And he says, this was a point of transition when Nevuah was just becoming a thing. You didn't have Nevuah. Remember that we said in the beginning of the book that there wasn't much Chazon b'Yisrael, there wasn't much prophecy. It did start to spread once Shmuel started presenting it, that we said. But but what people are familiar with primarily are seers. And that's the person you ask, hey, where are my donkeys? Ricky, you've been very patient. Yes?
If Shmuel wrote the book, is he an omniscient author who knows all the conversations? Or?
Yep, he's a prophet.
Okay.
He's a real prophet. He's not just a seer.
A seer makes more sense that that's somebody you would pay for their services.
Yes. It makes much more sense, correct.
It's all right.
It makes much more sense that you're paying him for his services if it's a ro'eh than if it's a navi.
Oh, well, I thought she was replying to what I was trying.
I said it's the first Rabbi Meir Balanes.
In some sense.
Here's a quarter shekel, where's my lost sheep?
Right.
Donkeys.
Donkeys, right. Okay. So that's that's one possibility. The other note that I bring you here is the Ma'ari Kara, who we don't quote much. The reason I don't quote him that much is not for lack of him being significant. He's a Rishon, an early writer, and very important in his own right. But because the Bar Ilan Sidi Ram doesn't bring him on the psukim, and therefore it's a big pain to cut and paste him in from the online resource where I'm going to get him. So that's why you don't see him much. But the Marikara has the following comment. Mashanu korin achshav nivim bidorot ha'acharonim. What we call nivim now in the later generations, hayu korin dorot ha'rishonim ro'eh, they used to call a ro'eh. So he's looking at it as, no, by the time of Shmuel, they're not using the term ro'eh. Kamo bidorot shel Shmuel, I'm sorry, not the time of Shmuel, the time of the writer of this sentence. Not the time of Shmuel. Shmuel's time, they are. But by the time the sentence is written, they're not. Kamo b'darosh Shmuel, like back in Shmuel's day, Shishalu l'narot ha'yotzo ma'im ha'yotzo'ot ma'im l'shov ha'yesh b'zeh ha'ro'eh, like they asked, is the ro'eh? Kach ha'yu nikra'im b'daros ha'rishonim, that's what they used to be called back in the day. Shayu magidim li'ish v'ish kema'ala lav umarin lo avon sha'asid likroso b'kach. They would tell a person what his deeds are, what the events of his life are, and what is going to happen to him as a result because of his mistakes, what bad thing is going to happen. I feel like it should say aven with an aleph and not avon with a sin, but that's what the text says. Umeshim, unless it's like lozoneinu, umeshivim osam meirisham, and that way they would get people to stop doing bad things. Umidera hakasha, and from following a bad path, imhayachad be'ir ushnayim mishpacha shachodim, if somebody or two people were sinning. That's a phrase from elsewhere. Abal misharabu achodim shayim shoditim kol chutzos. But when there were so many people sinning, vein ishos and mishpat utstakam evakesh emunan, people were not doing what they were supposed to do. Then Hashem sent Nevi'im to proactively go out and say, change your ways. Yom Hashkem v'shalomach, each day, getting up early and sending them. Chazru likrosam Nevi'im al shem shemochichin liYisrael. Then they called them Nevi'im because their job was to go out and actively educate the people by scolding them. Nivuahu lashon dibur v'lashon tochacha. It's an expression of harsh speech. So the view of the Marikara is similar to what Radak is saying, but stronger, that the transition from Ro'eh to Navi is not so much a transition from low-level seer to serious prophet, but rather from low-level prophet, he is rebuking, he is educating, to someone whose job is to go out there full-time and tell people, ala Yeshaya, ala Yirmiyahu, ala Amos, people like that, change everything you're doing, what you're doing is wrong. That's the way they do it. Yes, Ricky.
Pardon my ignorance, but is Shmuel the first Navi?
No.
Okay, so in previous chapters, did we see the word Navi or Ro'eh, or does that have to do with the fact that maybe this book was written
before the other ones? You see the word Navi all the way back in the Chumash.
Okay.
In terms of the word Ro'eh, we have not seen it until now, but again, as we said, the people were described until then as either Malach or Ish Elokim. Those were the terms that we saw used in the earlier Sfarim. Why that so is a good question.
Where was the first time the word Navi is used?
I mean, it's certainly used in Chumash Devarim. Navi mikir b'chamei achecha kamoni akim lecha, right? Is already there.
Maybe, does this have to do with the fact that maybe Shmuel was written by Shmuel prior to when the rest of the Bible was written?
No, it doesn't. That's what I'm telling you. Navi appears in Chumash.
Yeah, Moshe was supposed to be.
Right. Lokam Navi Od B'Yisrael Kemoshe, and so on. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit at all to say that.
Okay, so why is it that we're seeing this now, the word Ro'eh, does that come?
No, that was what I had said, that Ro'eh is a Shmuel specific word as far as it's used here. As it's used here, again, Shmuel and Hanani in the time of King Asa. That's it.
So what does this mean?
I don't understand.
That's what I'm trying to say.
No, but I mean, what's the question?
Why is it here? Why do we need to throw this well?
Because Shmuel's audience is familiar with the term. Shmuel's audience knows the word ro'eh, according to what we're reading. Again, I still haven't been able to get to the end of the Marikara because he has a different view.
Even though this was never, the word Ro'eh was never
We mentioned. Never used it because we were reading books that used Malach and Ish Elokim as their description.
But it doesn't mean that it wasn't used.
Correct.
Parallel.
Correct.
At the same time, okay.
Correct. That's the idea. But the Marikara's conclusion is different. Where Radak says that the statement is actually Shmuel's statement, that back in the day you used this and people were still using it now when it's transitioning, Marikara says no. He says this sentence indicates that Sefer Shmuel was not written in Shmuel's time. In Shmuel's time, they're still saying Roeh. By the time this sentence is written, it's going to be later. How much later? Doesn't say.
But you just said that Shmuel wrote the book.
Thank you. Read the sentence. It's right here. Source number 3. Michlal she-sefer ze lo nichtav bimei Shmuel. That tells me that it was not written in the days of Shmuel. She-she-kishetachzor ha-kol ha-mikra lo timsa she-nikra navi Roeh ki im kan. She-omer ezo-beit-ara. That's not quite true. Again, Dibra Hayyamim does. But we'll play along. He says you don't find that people are called that. La-marata, what we learn from here is she-doro shel Shmuel hu nikra lefanim b'Yisrael v'dor acharon l'Shmuel. The answer has to be that Shmuel's time was called back in the day by the time the book was written down. That's the generation it's talking about. The problem is that the Gemara says Shmuel wrote it. And he says, God will have to figure this one out. That's his answer.
That was trying to figure this one out also.
The answer could have been as simple as that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, who have the job of editing Tanakh, did throw in a sentence to explain the use of the word Roeh for the reader.
Which might be why it's in brackets in this book.
It's in brackets?
Yeah, the English.
In English, it's in brackets.
Oh, the English, because they're trying to, well, they're trying to tell you that it's a side note.
But right. It's not like the rest of the text.
Right.
Yeah, mine's also in brackets.
Well, because that's not telling you anything about the text. That's telling you that this is a side note within the text. Don't get distracted by it.
The Sukkot and Zohar also, wasn't there like a side note?
Exactly. I used it there. Yeah. Thank you. I used it there regarding in the war.
Yeah.
Where we mentioned that the family of Chevar HaKeni had made their switch from right to left, they moved from east to west, and the question was, does that really belong there, or is it setting it up? Correct, that's another example of this. Thank you. So, where were we? The Roeh explanation is, it's a side note, it's a distraction, but nonetheless, we have to learn it. There's so much here that's really strange. You know, again, the story with the women, that whole business. So, going back to what I said before about Hashem manipulating events and how the whole mundanity of the story reflects that, as each piece of what is just a standard routine event suddenly becomes the coronation of Shaul, Malbim sees that throughout this story. First of all, take a look at source number 4. On the conversation between Shaul and the youth. Right? So he says, Vayomer, Shaul ra'a, ki tova atzat hanar shehu yeyeh ha-shoel va'anotein. It's a subtle point within the text. The youth says to him, I have a quarter shekel, I'll go give it to him and I will ask him. It's not just saying we and using the first person and singular, but rather, he's saying, I'm going to do it, not you, Shaul. And that's on purpose. Shaul saw that the kid was right. Shuyah Shoel v'notein, that he, the kid, should be the one, or the servant, should be the one to ask and give the money. That's why he said, all right, let's go. You will be the main person. I'm going to be along for the ride. And that was from God. Why? Shaul wants to play Prince and the Pauper. Shaul wants to have the youth appear to be the main person, and he is the person who's along for the ride. Why? Well, Shaul wants to do it because essentially it is. Well, there are two ways you can look at the logic. We're going to see Ralbag has a different idea. But one way to look at it is, it's a test. is this Ro'eh going to figure out who the main person is and who the servant is? That's one way to look at it, is that as the test. The other way to look at it is, it's, you know, we're giving such a terrible gift. You know, I'm a person of standing. This doesn't look good. Let the youth be the one to give. That'll be Ra'bak. I think it's Ra'bak. But that's one note from the Malbim, is this is part of the demonstration of Shmuel that will give them confidence that he's for real. Further, Malbim says, Hema, on the word Hema, Gam Zaya Bahashkacha, this, meaning the conversation with the women, is also arranged by God. Sha'acha Shamar Hashem Kika'is Macharish Lach Elecha Ish Me'eretz Binyamin, because we don't know this yet, but the Psukim are going to tell us that Hashem told Shmuel the day before that Shaul was coming. He has to come at the time that Hashem picked. He said, "Ka'et machar," at this time tomorrow, a guy from Binyamin is going to wander into town. Shaul is early. So what do you do? He has to come at that time, not early, not late. Kemosha kasu ka'et machar. He said, this time tomorrow. So therefore, Hashem arranges it that he meets these girls, and the girls are going to take up his time with this whole long spiel about where they can find him and how they should find him and so forth. They, in order to make sure that he will show up at the time that was predicted. Interesting. One more piece that relates to the young women and their conversation and fits it into the idea of divine arrangement picks up on what we've already noted regarding the magic of wells and young women in Tanakh. Take a look at source number 5, the Medrash in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kol mishu nichnas la'ir u'motzei ne'arot lifanav, darko matzlacha lifanav. If you come to town and you find that there are young women there, so you'll succeed. U'minayin tekdashu kein. How do you know that? Bo re'eme Eliezer eved Avram. Sha'altro nichnas la'ir matzan ne'arot yotzeo lifanav. But when he's going to get into the city, he finds the young girls there. Sh'ne'amar hine anuchi yitzav alein hamayim, and the benot ha'ir yotzeo lishof mayim, ta ta ta. But Kadosh Baruch Hu itzliach darko, and Hashem made him succeed. Shnemar, Hashem itzliach darki. Ve'od mimi ata lamed, and who else will you learn from? Moshe Rabbeinu. Sh'ad lo nichnas le'ir matzan ne'arot yotzeot lefanav. Before he entered the city, he again saw the girls coming out. Shnemar ulechohin midyan sheva banot, and vatavon vatidlana. They came and got the water. Vitzliach darko v'alalam lucha, and he succeeded. Uminayin teidel chashukin, and how do you know? Bo'ur emi Yaakov. Look at Yaakov. Sh'adlo nechnas le'ir matzana rodeo tzol lefanav. He hadn't yet entered, and lo and behold, there were the girls coming out. Sh'nem avihinei rachel bito ba'a im hatzon. So, that's your, this is a sign from God. God is manipulating this, and it demonstrates that there will be success. So, every step of the way is being manipulated by God in order to bring about the selection of Shmuel, of Shaul, sorry.
What does it say, Bitot Rachel?
It doesn't.
Where?
Bito, Rachel Bito. It's, that's the Pasuk. That, because it says, because it's Rachel, the daughter of Lavan. It mentioned Lavan first. What happens is the Pasuk mentions that Yaakov meets the shepherds, and he asks them about Lavan, right?
Okay.
Ricky.
Yeah, but it's not
here. No. It doesn't need to give you one of the Yaakov meets the shepherds. He asks them about Lavan, and they say to him, Shalom, v'hinei Rachel bito ba'ayim hazam. Yeah. Okay. So that's a little bit about the arrangement. But now let's talk gifts. So there are a couple of ways to understand this business of giving the gift. We may not finish all of it today, but at least we'll start on the idea. So the first approach is of the two that this was normal. This is what you did. Go back to the Ro'eh idea, distinguishing Ro'eh and Navi, and that's a Ro'eh. And that's the sound of what Malbim says. If you look at number 6, he says, Ve'ish nichbad, the person is honored. Yana yu nimtsa'im ba'isahi anashim elokiyim nichbadim be'emet. There were people of God who were truly honored. But you couldn't go to them for your secrets and find out what's going to happen tomorrow. Is it going to rain? Am I baseball game? You couldn't do that with them. He says, they didn't need someone like that. They didn't need some secluded man of God who doesn't help you find your donkeys. But there were other people who would tell the future. They would do it using sorcery. And those people are not people of status. Those aren't respectable people. Right? So you have two categories. You have the people who are known as man of God, and they know the future, but they're not telling. And then you have the people who are telling, but they don't necessarily know what they're talking about. They just, they have a bag filled with bones, and they shake the bag and tell you this is what's going to happen. Such that you're not even going to get what you seek. You're not going to get God's explanation of it. What you're going to get is embarrassment, because if people are going to find out you went to a fortune teller. And so, what the servant said to Shaul was, this person is not either category. He's nichbad. Right? He's honored. V'gam kol asher yidaber bo yavo, and everything he says will actually come to pass. V'lachin nel chasham. So let's go there. Ulay yagid lanu es darkenu. Maybe he will tell us our derech. And the way Malbim reads derech is shagid lanu ha'inyan shebavuro halachnu v'derech hazeh shudvar asonos. Right? Like he said, like Ruth said, from her translation, he will tell us about the reason why we came. He'll tell us where we can find the donkeys. So that's the idea. This was a normal thing to do. You go to ask, and you want someone who will tell you the future, but you want someone who actually knows the future in order to be able to tell it to you. And as far as the gift, yeah, that was what you did. If you take a look at source number 7, Chubona Teret Paz, there's a major, major debate that began with the Rambam. I mean, the debate is really older, but the Rambam really, lit the fuse on it to explode it. And it's a debate about people who say, I want to devote my time to study. I want to learn Torah. That's what I want to do. Not about teaching. I just want to devote my time to sit and learn Torah. Do I have the right to say to the community, you should support me because I'm engaged in studying? So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that the Rambam comments on speaks about the importance of supporting yourself, and the Rambam comments and talks about how terrible it is to go seeking the support of others. But the Rambam is not the last word on the topic, and the Tashbates came out and said, absolutely not, that's not true. It is valuable for a Jewish world to have what is essentially R&D. Meaning, just like in every realm of study, in every realm of academia, you don't say, well, we know everything there is to know about physics now. That's it. And we know everything there is to know about biology now. You have people who study pure physics, not applied. Pure, for the sake of advancing that knowledge. Plus, there's a view that, religiously, it's valuable within a community for there to be people who are studying, whether because it provides protection for the community or whether it demonstrates the community is a righteous community. Look, they're supporting the study of Torah. And to say, therefore, it's important to have them. They can turn to others for support. The Rambam did not disagree with that idea. The Rambam did not disagree with the value of the R&D. The Rambam did not disagree with the value of the community supporting the study of Torah. What he disagreed with was the question of which direction the conversation goes. Meaning, what the Rambam said was, the community can come to some outstanding scholar and say, we want you to study and we are willing to support it because we think this is important. Whereas, what he didn't want was for the person who wants to study to say to people, support me. That's where the Rambam argued. So I bring all of this as introduction to number 7. The Chuvos Ateret Paz discusses this issue much after the time of the Rambam. And it's not his own words. He's quoting Rabbi Yosef Yavetz, who wrote a commentary to Pirkei Avot. And in here, he's responding to the Rambam. And he says to the Rambam, Mayaneh HaRav, what would the master, the Rambam, respond? Because when the text says, Vayomer Shaul Naro, Vayosef Anar, etc., when Shaul says, what do we have as a gift? Right? And the youth says, oh, I got a quarter shekel, right? What's with that? Hinei mevor shezahaya derech hadorshim devar Hashem, ipi navi. That shows that that's what they used to do. Shalola voilav biadayim rekaniyot. They didn't show up empty-handed. Avim yunach sheshmuel okibal mimenu meuma. Even if you'll tell me that Shmuel did not accept anything. Liz yachdo b'mida zula atzmo. Because Shmuel was unique. And Shmuel said, I don't take anything from anybody. Aval vadayo reshekachaya minhag lefanim b'Yisrael. But it certainly shows you that that was the practice. Otherwise, why would Shaul have assumed he had to bring something? V'gam Shaul b'nevi'im. And this is he's borrowing the words in brackets tell you he's borrowing the language that we're going to use later on in the book Hagam Shaul b'nevi'im that Shaul is a prophet. V'yadabli safek minhagehem v'darcheihem. Even though Shaul does not actually become a navi until later, it seems he seems to be assuming that actually Shaul was already a navi. And what he's saying is, Shaul knew what Nevi'im did, and yeah, that was what they did. They gave gifts. So the Ataret Paz looks at the Rambam and he says, they're giving gifts to the Navi here. What do you do with that? And this is not the only source you can provide to support that point of view. I'm not interested in opening the whole debate because we have like 4 minutes left. But the point that I wanted to show you is, the Ataret Paz makes the assumption, this is what you did. You gave gifts. And here we come back to Malbim's comment that I said Rabag, but it's not. It's Malbim who says, take a look at number 8. V'hine, ha-tishura lo hayu notenim rak anashim nichbadim ha-mitra'im lefanav derech kavod. Gifts were supposed to be given by people of status, respectable people, right? That's an honorable thing to get a gift from someone like that. Lo anashim b'nei b'li shem, asher yavo rak lishol tzarchei. I'm not your random person who nobody knows who just comes to you because he lost something. V'haya erech hadishurak fi erech kavod anotein v'amekabel. The gift was supposed to match the level of the giver and the recipient. You give something that fits. Ulam hasachar sheinodim hashoalim barav hakat sheilatam ayak fi atarach ukfi amahuta anyan sheshaalu hu alav. But what you would give would also depend on what you were asking for. What kind of effort are you demanding from the seer? So Shaul says we have to pay him for his work if we're going to go. I'm just going to sum it up outside because we're running out of time. He says we have to pay him for his work. What can we possibly bring him? Granted, there isn't that much work because it's just donkeys, right? So it's not a big deal, he says. But I have nothing. And then he says further in bet on the flip side, when I show up, I am a person of standing, right? We know his lineage. So, and not to mention he's tall. So I should really give him a proper gift. So what are we going to do? And so therefore he says, all right, you give the gift. You give the gift. So it won't be such an insult. Ralbag has a different take. And again, just to finish off the thought, I'm going to summarize it, but it's in source number 9. Ralbag says it wasn't payment. He says it was a totem of sorts, an item to help him focus on them. In other words, you give him something and he sort of focuses on it, and Rabbi says maybe it's necessary in particular because Shmuel is aged at this point. How old he is depends on how you understand the story. But he is getting old and maybe his faculties are weakening and he needs something to focus on, and he compares it to Yitzchak with Esav. Yitzchak says to Esav, bring me these food, right? And then I'll bless you. Why? He needs something to focus on, to latch onto, Rabbag suggests, and that's what it is. It's not about giving him payment. I'm going to give him a quarter shekel, and now he'll tell us where the donkeys are. But just to give him something of value, and he'll focus on that. So all of this is one view that says that the going to him for it is normal, and paying him for it is normal, or giving him a totem is normal. What we'll see next time is a completely different idea, which Malbim also brings, and Radak suggests as well, which is, no, they're just not sophisticated. So we'll come back to that, God willing. Yeah, we'll come back to that, God willing, next week.